All right, we're on for the February edition of the Nebraska Workers' Compensation Watch podcast. I'm John Ream, and with me are the other three partners, Ream, Bennett, and Moore, or the not saying I'm like the main one or anything like that, but the Todd, Roger, and Rod. Everybody, let's just do a roll call and introduce yourself and get down to the podcast.
I'm Roger Moore. I'm the good-looking one.
I'm Rod Ream. I'm the old one.
I'm Todd Bennett. I'm the everything of this bunch.
All right. Well,
Mr. Self-Confidence.
Yeah, now that we're out of the way.
Lacking none.
Yeah. Well, glad we got that out of the way.
That's right.
So we're going to let the good-looking one of the bunch, Roger, had a very interesting story last week about a hearing, and I decided – like, hey, that would be a good – use that story as a good way to talk about hearings in the Nebraska Workers' Compensation Court and maybe talk about how they're a little bit different than they are in Iowa. So, Roger, why don't you start telling us your story about the hearing?
Yeah. There have been lots of changes in the legal field in terms of how the legal proceedings are done, lots of Zoom depositions, a few Zoom trials. This happened to be, the intent was to have an in-person hearing last Tuesday in Fremont, which is a town about a half hour north west of Lincoln. And that morning it was 20 below the temperature wise. And the opposing attorney and I drove to Fremont only to find that the courthouse where we were going to have our hearing was closed down. This was a workers' compensation hearing. Happened to have the judge's number, and so we called her judge up, her in this case, and we decided that since we were just going to argue a legal issue and submit some exhibits, that we didn't need an actual hearing in the courthouse since that was closed down because of the inclement weather. So the court reporter was there, the judge was there, and the opposing attorney and I were there. So we handed the exhibits to the court reporter, who was sitting in her car. When the judge got that, we had her go in the car with the court reporter, and the opposing attorney and I were in our own cars, and we conference called through our car's audio to submit the exhibits, and the hearing was accomplished in the parking lot across from the Dodge County Courthouse. It took about 5 minutes in 20 below temperature weather, so that was a first. Never had a courthouse closed down for inclement weather in my 20 plus years of being an attorney, but it's just a kind of a testament to how we've all had to adjust on the fly and do things maybe a little differently than we've had in the past to get things done. But I will definitely never forget that experience.
Sure. Besides it being in a parking lot, what was different about that parking lot hearing than a typical workers' compensation hearing in Nebraska? How is that? What are some of the differences and similarities between the two hearings that you're involved in?
Yeah, there are some hearings where the client does not need to appear for that are just motions or legal proceedings that no testimony is taken at. This happened to be one of those types of hearings. Even though it was a trial, it was a legal issue, and we were just going to simply offer some exhibits and have some argument on. In a typical workers' compensation proceeding in particular, in Nebraska and Iowa, the claimant, the injured party, would show up and give testimony in front of the judge, the workers' compensation judge. There aren't any juries. The court reporter would be there taking down the information. The opposing attorney is there. And sometimes there's a representative of the employer that's there to give testimony on some of the issues as well. So it just happened to kind of work out that this was a hearing that didn't require testimony, or it would have been very difficult to do that from a parking lot in a car, sitting with a claimant there to do that.
What was the legal issue, by the way, that made it necessary for you guys for the parties to go to Fremont?
Well, this is an older issue that my partner Todd eventually brought into the foray more than 20 years ago. We were arguing that the permanent benefits should be paid back to the date of injury that an individual suffers and not from the date of maximum medical improvement forward. In this case, the gentleman had a knee replacement surgery and a rating of 37%, which resulted in about 6 months worth of benefits. And they paid that over a 6-month period of time, and we argued that that should have been paid immediately within 30 days of when the rating was notified, because his injury was more than 6 months in the past. This particular employer decides that they're only going to pay from that point forward. So we've been kind of waiting for a case like this to bring this issue to the fold and ask for yet another appeals court determination that that's how benefits should have been paid. So it was really a unique kind of a case in this hearing.
Okay. Well, and then maybe let some of the other lawyers chime in. In a more typical workers' compensation hearing, what does a client need to testify about? Why do they need to testify at a hearing? I'll let Todd or Rod take that, or both.
Well, the client's testimony generally gives the whole picture of what has happened, what the client did for a living, what kind of work activities he was engaged in or doing at the time that he was injured or became ill. And then they talk about how they're injured, where their injuries are located, how those injuries affect their life and their ability to work, because all those things are important to the judge to decide what they're entitled to under our compensation rules. And they're usually the person that testifies the longest in a workers' comp trial. Workers' comp trials, since there's no jury there's not much theatrics involved in it. So, their testimony usually runs under an hour or and sometimes more than an hour, because that's a lot of time for a single witness to testify. And under the rules for the workers' comp court, there's not a lot of things that are not allowed as evidence. We don't have the rules of evidence. And if the information seems like it's fair to the judge, they will listen to and look at documents that a judge in the classic, TV version of a trial where there's a jury watching and people are jumping up and down and objecting. That's kind of an overview of what the worker does.
Yeah. Go ahead, Todd.
Well, and a lot of times when they do that, that's because this court, it's not like a jury trial where you get an immediate decision. So all these records, medical bills, accident reports, diagrams of body parts, and doctor opinions or voc rehab people that testify in written form, it all comes into written evidence. So the only typical witnesses is going to be the injured worker, perhaps an HR director or a case manager from a particular employer, or they may have a supervisor or somebody like a foreman who will testify as to how they're currently working. And typically those are the only witnesses. And the difficult thing that's frustrating for a little bit for injured workers is you don't get that immediate satisfaction of what's the decision. Because typically when you get it, once you're done, that judge takes it under advisement. So it's 3 to 6 months usually after a court hearing, you get a written decision with a written order.
One thing that's interesting about workers' comp hearings is when people come and testify, but the evidence, when we talk about the medical records and the vocational records and the bills and the personnel records, all that comes in at the beginning of the trial in Nebraska. The bulk of the evidence actually comes in before really anybody starts saying anything, because the records in a workers' comp case, at least in Nebraska, can be a couple hundred pages for both sides. And I know Iowa has a little bit different rules, but almost everything, a lot of the written evidence comes in before anybody says anything at trial, in my experience. Why do cases get tried? Roger brought up a legal issue. Most cases settle in the Nebraska Workers' Compensation Court. And then versus, if you look at like the petitions, which are lawsuits filed, versus the number of trials, most cases settle. Why do cases typically go to trial instead of settle? In your experience, leave that open to every kind of let everybody address that. Roger talked about sometimes there's legal issues that want to be brought up. Are there other reasons why cases tend to go versus why cases tend to settle?
Well, I think it's a lot like it's almost like a a car. You either got a good one or a bad one. And a lot of times those good cases are based on your doctors. If you got, you could have the best surgeon in the world, but he's just a bad witness, or he doesn't stick up for somebody. But on the other hand, you have these factual disputes. Did they get hurt? What body part did they really injure? Was it a neck versus a hand, you know, and things like that. But I, at least from my perspective, it's like the kitchen sink. You got a good judge. You got someone who's going to, his tendency and bias is in favor of injured workers. Or do you have someone who comes from an insurance perspective where they used to defend cases? I think it's all a matter of you put all these facts together. And then it comes down to time and effort and money. Because as we know, the decisions could take 6 to 8 months to get a trial date, 3 to 6 months to get a decision. And then if it's appealed, it's usually a year and a half after an appeal. So when you kind of look at what's a reasonable offer versus a trying the case, you kind of weigh all these factors and what's in the best interest of that particular client or worker.
Sure. Roger, you want to talk on that, like why some cases go versus why some cases settle?
Well, when I first started trying any kind of case, it wasn't workers' comp, but the one thing that hearings or trials have in common is they resolve a dispute between the parties. And in a workers' comp case, the purpose of it is to resolve any arguments about what happened, how it happened, what does it entitle you to. I used to just sit down and write a checklist of what I had to prove. And I think that's what a lot of people do in one way or the other. I mean, we can get, we have to hit all the things on the checklist to collect money for our clients. The ideal case is that we just focus on what's the real dispute about. Sometimes outside issues get in there, but I mean, we generally have to prove, did it happen on the job? Were they an employee? Did they tell anybody on time? Because you have to give notice of an injury in order to collect. I mean, there's just this checklist, and cases for injury are like everything else in life. There's varieties of them. I mean, I've got a bunch of cases settled right now, and I don't think I have any of them where the same. It's the same issue that we're really fighting about. You know, sometimes it's about, did the accident really cause anything? Sometimes it's about, do I have to pay for the surgery from an employer? Because the medical costs for these work injuries are huge. Many of the injuries that we deal with have medical expenses at or near $100,000 if they get involved in major surgery. So there's all kinds of questions that these hearings decide. And that one judge of the Nebraska Supreme Workers' Compensation Court that presides at the hearings is supposed to and do know the rules. They knew what the checklist is. They listen, and then they write a decision where they entered an order either that somebody's going to get paid X amount of money or that the insurance company is not going to have to pay anything. And the reason cases settle is that very few of them are absolutely clear who's going to win. And so the parties that are fighting with each other kind of see if they can find a middle ground where, you know, you don't lose and get completely kicked out of court as an injured worker or ordered to pay a huge amount of money if you're an insurance company.
Sure. Roger, any thoughts?
Yeah, a lot of the clients, I think, expect that they're going to have their day in court. And when they don't, they kind of feel cheated. They do, most cases, get a chance to give deposition testimony where the other attorney asks questions, but they don't really get a, you know, kind of lay their heart on the line and tell the judge everything that they've been through. And I think they regret not having that opportunity being heard. You know, that's a basic human instinct. It's difficult, but you know, I try to tell them that when that check comes in the hand, that's an acknowledgement that there's some real element to what you're going through. It may not compensate you completely for everything you've been through, but at least is the insurance company, the employer saying, we know you had an injury, and this is to compensate you to some extent for that injury. There's the old adage that you settle the bad cases and you try the good ones, but you know, the more money at stake, sometimes those cases are harder to settle. And there's a smaller claim, and you're fighting about $10,000 or $15,000, then oftentimes those are looked at as not worth the time it would cost the defense and the insurance company to pay their attorney to fight the case. So those might be more commonly settled. The more money there is at stake, the more issues that there are from the beginning of the case through the end, whether you're talking about causation and temporary benefits and permanent benefits and voc rehab and medical, those sometimes are harder to settle. So it really does depend. But I think, you know, it's kind of like stocks. Some people are more risk averse than others. And as Rod said, nobody wants to go to court and then get zero after all that they've been through. And on the same token, the insurance company doesn't want to get popped for a big award and have to pay a lot of money out after they've paid their attorney to try and fight the case. So most people are risk averse, both on the insurance company side and the injured party side. And there are a lot of times are financial considerations too. If the case has been denied and you've been out of work and you don't have a job and you don't have money to pay your bills, sometimes those financial considerations come into mix, and that kind of forces you to have to take maybe less money than what you wanted to, just to try and get things back on track for you. And we try to be, you know, those are just some real life considerations that don't have to do a lot with the legalities of the case, but which we have to try and take into account in advising the client. And some people just don't want to go to court and don't want to testify in front of a judge. They get nervous about that. And so if that causes you stress, and it's not worth trying to fight and get some more money by going to court, then we have to be able to, and we do hear clients when they say that, and tell them, you know, this is your case. I can advise you on what I think you should do, but ultimately it's your decision, it's your life, and we'll do whatever you want to do, but this is what we think you ought to do.
And the decisions, I think, whether to settle or accept a settlement, the amount of experience that the lawyers have is a great big factor. I mean, you're looking at almost 50 years here, and Todd Bennett's 25 or 30 years in practice, Roger's 20 or so, John's 15 to 20. There have been a lot of hearings we've gone in and out of and heard about, and we talk with our competitors and our friends and have a pretty good idea about when it is that you hold them and when it is that you fold them, to use that old country western song thing. Sorry for interrupting, Todd.
No, that's all right. And I think, you know, a lot of people, when they hear, what, you know, do we settle or not or go to court? So many people want to go to court. But when you go to court, a judge doesn't award a lump sum. We're talking about the statute, and the act allows weekly benefits for a certain number of period or number of weeks. And each time somebody either gets paid a certain amount of weeks, not necessarily, but the value goes down, but you're only entitled to a weekly payment if you don't resolve a case. And then you got issues like Social Security and Medicare, where when a lot of clients, you know, especially these days, if they feel they can't go back to work and they're looking at Social Security disability which automatically makes them potentially eligible or reasonably expected to be eligible for Medicare, then those considerations come into play, because a weekly check in a comp case will reduce at some point a Social Security check. Now, regular retirement, it doesn't have any effect, but then you still have those issues with Medicare that they get a piece of the pie. They have an interest if you settle a case at some point. And so it's kind of like this, when I say you put everything in the sink and it's a balancing factor of all these facts, what's best for the client under all the facts? Because you can't just look at a comp case, you got to look at all the facts. Could be Medicaid, Social Security, Medicare, could be long-term, could be whether or not they're going to move. For example, a recent case we settled where in Nebraska for Medicaid, for example, he would have been kicked off the rolls, but he moved and established residency in Colorado, where they have Medicaid expansion, and his weekly settlement in Colorado doesn't affect it. So there's different kind of factors that go in that you just got to weigh what's in the best interest of each client.
Sure. You know, one thing that's interesting in my, you know, my experience is that, you know, Roger's right. People do want to be heard, but people also want to be vindicated. And I think particularly in workers' comp cases, if there's been a sour employment relationship or it's been terminated. I mean, we'll talk about how the comp court doesn't decide that, but, you know, sometimes the witnesses from the other side, whether it's a nurse, case manager, whether it's an HR person, can give you admissions about that are helpful for your own case. You can use their testimony to help you out about maybe the cause of an injury or whether you were hurt, period, or whether they have work for you. And I think that at least from the clients that I've been to trial with, they seem to, you know, feel some satisfaction with, you know, having their people, having not only being heard at court, but also, you know, having the employer to some extent held accountable. And a lot of times, Todd's right, it's absolutely better to settle a case. And Rod's right, the workers' comp trials are not dramatic either. It's not like it's a jury trial. I had a client of mine that there's an employment law case that went on after a workers' comp trial. And the person, I talked about the workers' comp trial, the hearing, and the client said to me, well, that was a hearing. That's what that was. You know, it's not a dramatic proceeding in many respects. And they hardly ever last more than 2 to 3 hours. I've had more, you know, they're usually very short. They seem like they go a long time, but 2 or 3 hours is not a long time for a hearing. Todd, how are things, just briefly, you have a lot of experience in Iowa. How are things different in Iowa for your hearings and workers' comp over there?
Well, and Roger can help me out here too, but ironically in Iowa, I would say they're more digitally oriented. Mm-hmm. Where you're digitally submitting exhibits 14 days before a hearing that are emailed in a PDF documents to the deputy and the judge who's going to hear the case. And then you got objections 7 days before that. And then about 5 days before hearing, you got a hearing report with all issues. And if it doesn't get done right, you're only allotted, for example, 50 pages for your own exhibits, 100 for joint exhibits. So it limits really what comes into evidence. And then you get these issues with, you know, right now they're not hearing in-person hearings until July. And that may be pushed back. And then you got the consideration of whether or not you can do a WebEx video trial, but it doesn't work real well. It's not a very good system. It's kind of like that crapshoot with if it works, it works great. But if it doesn't, it's not a fun trial. But it's pretty informal that way. But for the hearings, typically it's in a county, just like Nebraska, where the accident happened. Or you can agree to go to Des Moines. Which typically is what we do because it's kind of easier for everybody since everybody is kind of principally located in Des Moines. But those hearings, again, you only get an hour of presentation. Your opening and closing, that counts towards your hour. So you really got to limit what you're going to say. You cut to the chase. You cut to, you know, kind of as they say, cut through the beef and get to the point.
Yeah, and it does really require a lot more cooperation between the two sides to prepare those joint exhibits, because you might have some things in there that you'd like to see, and the other side might not want those in, or you might have 80 pages you want to do joint, and they may only agree to the 50 or 60, and they have 50 of their own, and it does, the timeline is moved up. You have to have this stuff kind of squared away 30 days before the actual hearing happens, whereas sometimes in Nebraska, we're getting reports, you know, a week or so before the hearing, and those are allowed in depending on what they are and whether the other side has an objection. So it's more rigid, much more rigid than Nebraska. Nebraska doesn't have any rules about how many pages you have to offer or can offer. You don't have to collaborate with the other side other than to send them an exhibit list so they won't have duplicate exhibits offered. But it's a much more liberal hearing. But you know, they're and they have deputies. They call them deputies, not judges, but the same power. You know, they hear the decision, hear the case, and they render a decision after the fact as well. But there definitely are some more rigid requirements over in Iowa compared to Nebraska.
Sure. And then in Iowa, you hear the you have the hearing in the counties that the injury happened in, like in Nebraska.
You do, but as Todd said, if you know sometimes you will move the hearing to Des Moines because you can get it sooner. In terms of how long it takes to go to a final hearing, if you've got to go to an outer county in Iowa, it might be a year or a year and a half before they'll schedule that for a hearing, and it might only be 6 months if you go to Des Moines. So, you know, we try and look at different options when we schedule a hearing. And the other thing is, it's really kind of frustrating for me, having been in Nebraska, is that when you file a case, you have to get a hearing scheduled very soon after you file it.
Yeah.
So every case that's filed is assigned a hearing date. And in Nebraska, we don't do that. It's filed, and after it's been on file for a certain amount of time, the workers' compensation judge will send out a trial notice saying your case has been set for this date. And what that does is eliminate cases needlessly being set for hearing that are going to settle. You know, most of the cases are going to settle. So you don't want to take up a hearing date for a case that's going to settle down the line, because Iowa just doesn't go back and fill in those slots. You know, they just kind of leave them. So it ends up taking a longer time to get to a hearing in Iowa because they require every damn hearing to be set for a hearing date right when you file it, instead of waiting 5 or 6 months into the case to see if it's really going to head to a hearing or not.
That's
the ironic part, though, that's frustrating for clients, is because in Nebraska, you know, we all get calls and emails, hey, when am I going to get a trial date? When are you going to get a trial date? Attorneys don't have a control over any trial date in Nebraska. It's all up to the judge's trial docket and discretion. In Iowa, as Roger's saying, you actually have to agree on a date with defense counsel, usually within 30 days of when you file that hearing. And you got several arguments where we want a hearing in three or four months, or they want one in a year and a half. And if you got a dispute, you got to file a motion to have the judge hear the argument, and then he picks a date that you may not have any control over after that. So it's really kind of a difference of who schedules it and when that's frustrating for clients and attorneys.
Geography is a challenge in Nebraska also, particularly up west of probably North Platte. Some of the judges only go out into those counties once a year, two at the most. And there's a very long wait for hearings out in western Nebraska, mm-hmm. which is frustrating for the clients. And,
yeah.
Yeah, we have
that set a hearing was July 5th at 9 a.m. in Valentine. So I spent my July 4th in a hotel room halfway between Omaha and Valentine, and had to get up at 5:30 to get over to Valentine for the hearing at 9 o'clock. So you'd hope they'd be better as far as scheduling something like that, to not make that kind of a burden for attorneys to come into those hearings, but it is really based on their schedule and what they want to do. We don't have any control over that.
Well, we're getting towards our half an hour. One thing in Nebraska we do have is we have the option to do video trials, but both parties have to agree on that. And I think that would make it much simpler if we could just get the court to order video trials. And I think that would help with people living, particularly in the panhandle, anybody really west of North Platte, where the judges don't get there on a regular basis. Because I think the judges get to the communities along Interstate 80, Grand Island, Hastings, Kearney, Lexington, Dawson County, they get out there all the time. I mean, and up and down Highway 81, Norfolk, Columbus,
right.
You know, the judges all rotate through there all the time. I think people in those communities don't have a problem getting hearings on a timely basis. But yeah, at any time, anything west of North Platte or in some of your more places that are more than an hour off the interstate, it's tough. So, but again, we're about half an hour. Roger, it was a good story. Any final thoughts from anybody else about hearings?
I think it's just a matter of, you know, these judges, they're not judges in the county where the accident happened. They're actually appointed by the governor, and they're four judges in Lincoln, four judges in Omaha, and they're all well-versed in the comp law. Obviously, that people like better than others and on certain issues, but they're people who know at least the law and can apply it. So it's not somebody who doesn't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
but for clients, it's just kind of, I got a phrase, it's the most informal setting with the most at stake between benefits and medical. You know, you hear these jury trials and comp trials, they add up to more money than a lot of the, most of the PI cases.
Personal injury. Yeah, personal injury.
And I kind of use that phrase because like Roger trying one in the cold, I'm just sitting here remembering one of my early ones was in a closet in Holdridge, in the judge's closet, or the maintenance closet in the basement with Judge Fitzgerald. So it's really the most informal setting with the most at stake.
Yeah, Roddy, any final thoughts?
No, I think it's been interesting, and hope it helps people understand how the system operates better.
Yeah, biggest work comp decision I ever got was tried in a break room in the basement of Odo County, you know, on a plastic table.
Exactly.
And it was dusty, and they're rehabbing the building. So, yeah, we all have the crazy comp hearing stories. But I was gonna say Russell, that's my son. But Roger's got the best one for now. But I'm sure somebody's gonna top him here in the next 5 years because we do enough comp hearings and. We'll probably, somebody will be able to top it. So, but for now,
I hope we don't top 20 degree below temperature wise at some point in the near future.
Well,
worst
Roger,
I can ever remember.
You're the clubhouse leader for now, Roger. You're the standard for great work comp hearing story. So, all right. Well, does anybody have anything else? Because if not, we're past our half an hour. And
I've got one last thing, a joke to end this up with.
All right.
What did the drummer name his three daughters?
Oh no.
And a one, and a two, and a 1, 2, 3, 4.
Nice.
Gotcha.
Just a new material.
All right. Bye-bye, everybody.
All right. See you later.